Welcome to My Favourite Beatles Song, the podcast where we celebrate the music of the Beatles with a distinguished guest. Today, for the first time, I have a returning guest, Sam Wiles of the Pool or Nothing podcast. Welcome, Sam.
I was literally just about to ask you that. Am I your first guest back? I'm so honoured. Thank you so much for having me back on. This is very exciting. Although, right off the bat, it does bring into question the format a little bit. Like, okay, is this going to be my favourite Beatles song? And I wanted to highlight something that is so common throughout Beatles fandom, which is the Beatle fan who has a different favourite song every day, every week, every month. And that's kind of what I've done today. So rather than, say, going for my all-time serious, studious pick, which was Hey Bulldog last time, I hope you all enjoyed that episode, everyone. We are now back today to cover another Beatle who is not Paul McCartney, ironically.
I didn't want to change the title to my second favourite Beatles song. So, yeah, you're right. It's about celebrating Beatles songs. And, of course, our choices change regularly. But thank you for indulging me and coming back to talk about another one. As you've already answered my usual first two questions, I've got two new ones for you in your honour. So question one, what's your first memory of the Beatles?
Of course, the last time I was on, I chewed everyone's ear off with the story of my dad and how my friend Tom got me into the band, yada, yada, yada. But my earliest distinct separate memory that's got nothing to do with either of those two gents is when I was in year four here in the UK, which would be third grade in the States. I had a teacher at that time called Mr. Rook. And despite him being quite a strict and quite a stern gentleman, at least in my mind's eye, from my childhood perspective anyway, one lesson, he randomly got out a guitar and started singing and playing Yellow Submarine for us kids. And that stuck with me forever. I remember that the melody was rife for pun-based rewrites on the playground, most of which cannot be repeated on air, I am sure. But yeah, that was probably my earliest Beatle memory ever. And then the rest of my early exposure would be through parodies on TV. And I was going to talk about Simpsons, but I remember there was one distinct style parody of a Beatles doc. You know, the story of the Beatles with a posh British narrator, the band, the legend, yada, 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 that kind of thing. And it was done on the Cartoon Network show, The Powerpuff Girls. And it is a fantastic 15-minute parody. It's when four bad guys get together and they form the Beatles. And when I say every single line of dialogue is a Beatle lyric or pun, I mean it. It is absolutely fantastic. If anyone's got 15 minutes today on a lunch break, it's on YouTube for free.
With Mojo Jojo on Blast Arrays.
Better run for your lives if you can, little girls.
The acidic spit stylings of him.
You got you.
Princess accompanying Mojo on Blasters.
You say stop, but I say go, go, go!
And Fuzzy, the shy one.
I'm gonna let you down and leave you flat.
Provides the rock.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Yellow Submarine, because that must have been a gateway drug for many youngsters, because it was so often played at primary school, wasn't it, and taught to kids.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those songs that was written with children in mind. I don't remember as a kid coming across Tropic Island Hum or All
Frog
Together
Chorus.
Now.
Yeah.
Well, it is interesting you should mention the Frog Chorus, because despite the fact that it is derided, rather like Ebony and Ivory, it is a song that everyone knows. Everyone knows the melody to, at least here in the UK. And it's definitely one of those dirty McCartney secrets. Like, oh, we don't like to tell the Americans that Pipes of Peace got to number one for Christmas. You know, we don't want to tell them that. Definitely not. Very embarrassing. There's also that new audio player that for children specifically, where it's not connected to the internet or anything. And there is a Beatles release that they've done, a red and blue one. And obviously Yellow Submarine is the leading song on the red one. It is perfect. It is perfect. And it's also got really easy chords for even the most amateur adult to pass the legend on, I guess.
It's interesting how the Revolver box set got us to see Yellow Submarine in a totally different light, didn't it? As a sort of dark song about John's past. That was a major revelation.
I did feel a bit awkward when that came out, and like when I had that revelation myself, because I'm sat there thinking, so how long has Mark Lewison just known this to be fact, and I've just not picked up on it? You know, how long has it been part of the general knowledge of Beatledom as well? It's like when I found out that The Long and Winding Road was written during the White Album sessions, and I was like, excuse me, since when? What? Yeah. And that was in Lewison's recording sessions book, which you can get on a free PDF online, by the way.
Okay. So for a second question, I thought I've started to realise, obviously, that people have certain eras of the Beatles that they most resonate with. And I wonder which period you most identify with. I'm going to separate this into three options. Number one, the early Mop Tops, which we'll call from Please Please Me to Help. Middle Psychedelia, which will say the early Stirrings were Rubber Soul right through to Magical Mystery Tour, or the final period of Scary Hairy Beatles, which would be the White Album to Let It Be.
This was a difficult question for me because my two favourite albums, I'd say, would be Rubber Soul and Revolver, and I kind of put them on the transitionary period. And that is when the Beatles are at their most interesting, like when they're coming out of Hamburg, that's really interesting. When they're coming up to the big leagues in 63, that's really interesting. When they're about to go to Rishikesh and they've just done Magical Mystery Tour and Lady Madonna, I really love that. Whenever they're metamorphosizing and changing, that's always really exciting for me. And so to pick a fixed period is a bit of a misnomer for me. But going by just the parameters you've set out, I mean, Rubber Soul and Revolver are my two favourite albums, and that's going to be mid-period hippies, I'm going to say. So I will lock it in there. Yeah.
The song you've chosen indeed is from that era. The song is Within You, Without You. It was recorded at Abbey Road, March 15th, 1967, with overdubbing in March and April of that year. Released on the album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which was officially released on the 1st of June, although it did come out a week earlier in the UK, and the 2nd of June, 1967, in the US. It opens side two of that album. So those are the facts. But tell us, what made you choose this as your second favourite Beatles song?
Well, I think I actually listed a whole bunch of potential songs that I was going to cover if I was ever to come back. But when time came to think about it again, I had forgotten about that list. And so I just kind of thought about it afresh. And, you know, like I say, a lot of people's favourite Beatles song changes quite regularly. And so I decided to go along with that. And what was my favourite song at that time? It was Within You, Without You. It's always been a highly ranking one for me, but I think what tipped the scale recently was its inclusion in the Red and Blue Album box set, the Blue Album third vinyl disc, side one. But hearing it as a closer after following Now and Then, Blackbird, Dear Prudence and Glass Onion is just another really fun way to experience the song in a different, tangible way. I really enjoyed that. It was like listening to the underdub mixes. You know, it's just another fun context to experience the song. And any chance to hear this music in a new way that even approaches new is always something that I'm going to leap at the opportunity to do. Again, a bit ironic that I've still not picked a Paul song, but I've always been like that. I've always thought Paul is the best overall Beatle, but all of my top picks have always been John and George songs. Don't know what that says about me, but
I'm sure everyone knows this is a George song, but it's completely written by George Harrison. And in fact, it only features him of all the Beatles, right? He's no other Beatle plays on it.
Well, when I came across a bunch of other people's writings about this song, the most common thing they said was that, oh, this is George's imagine. You know, this is him laying his cards on the table. This is him espousing his philosophy to the world. This is what I think should be, and this is what you should think, and here are some cool ideas. And that is Imagine. That is Within You, Without You. But also, it is George's yesterday as well. it is George's solo moment that's got none of the other Beatles involved whatsoever, to the point where I think at the time of recording, Ringo was playing chess with Mal Evans in the corner somewhere. So, like, he's literally not doing anything on the track whatsoever. There are rumours that Paul might have some, like, tabla or tambura lick on there somewhere. I doubt it. I feel like George would make sure it wouldn't be on there.
Just make sure that nothing of Paul's is on this song. It's supposed to be holy.
You know, I definitely couldn't see that.
I've seen a couple of listings of musicians having Neil Aspinall was playing, being one of the...
Yeah, what's up with that?
What's
up with that? I think he had to just come in to do something specifically that George couldn't. I don't know. Like, maybe he just had to go from there to there really quickly and George couldn't do it in time, but Neil could. It is odd, though, because... There were no other musicians to kind of play all this stuff, and George had to, like, interview just random guys who just happened to play this stuff. And I think that would be a wonderful scene in the Sam Mendes film coming up.
So they say the Indian musicians on here are unnamed and probably unpaid, according to an interview with George Martin placed at the time. He said, we still don't have their names, so they haven't been paid for this. Which feels tragic, yeah. Doesn't it? And they were, I think, the Asian Music Circle, but they weren't professional musicians. They were like bus drivers and, you know, things like that. I feel like I really want to track them down and give them their due. But unfortunately, we can't. You know,
it's the call of duty, man. Yeah, when I'm waiting for that moment when Paul randomly calls and goes, I need a drummer, you know, and then bam, you're on a record.
Yeah.
But yeah, my history with the song goes quite far back, actually, because I've just showed on camera for the purposes of people who are just listening. This is my dad's copy of Sgt. Pepper. It was regularly played in the house when a record player was plugged in. And so subconsciously, Within You, Without You, it has been within and without me for, you know, over 20 years now. But it wasn't until I went to uni and I played this particular record over and over and over again, possibly with the assistance of certain substances, that, you know, I really gained an affection for this track. But it wasn't, like, conscious. It's funny because, like, over the years, like, Pepper's always reappraised, so you're always thinking about Pepper and you're always being asked about Pepper by Beatle fans, and you're always talking about Pepper to other Beatle fans. And whenever I was asked what my favourite song from this album was, in a kind of almost out-of-body experience, zen-like moment, I've just said, like, Within You, Without You, it would just come out my mouth. There wouldn't be anything rational behind that, just a gut feeling, an instinct. And I've been doing that for well over 20 years now. And for me, it is definitively uncontested as the greatest track on the album. The only other heavyweight bout you could have would be pitting it against A Day in the Life. I think most people would say A Day in the Life is better. But a lot of this comes down to your preference of style, I guess. And I'm sure we're going to have an in-depth conversation about Indian music in a second.
But it's the philosophy that's stitched into it that is at the heart of it. And I think, is it Ian McDonald who said it? It's the conscience of Sgt. Pepper's. It's the serious, you know, the very deep spiritual center of that album.
I think fundamentally what I find so attractive about the song is that if you do strip away and all, like, look past the pompous semi-holier than thou messaging of the song, it is just like a buddy of yours who's really excited to share some cool new fun ideas that he's learned on his new holiday in India. And that kind of inclusiveness and tenderness is really great in a Beatles song. That really helps George connect with his audience. And you do, like, feel that you're his friend. It's one of the most intimate Beatles experiences there is, because there are so many preachy songs like this that, well, end up being preachy and very impersonal as well. And George manages to craft this, like, quiet, delicate little bubble between you two. And it just feels like he's almost, like, whispering all of these secrets to you. But then you get that "we were talking" line right at the start, and It is one of the most arresting opening Beatle lines ever. I just feel like it's, for, especially for a song so kind of ponderous, there's this energy that is sustained throughout it. And I mean, it's all about energy. It's all in the mind. You know, it's very, very fitting for that song.
We were talking.
It feels like George is having a one-on-one conversation with you, but he, the way he's phrasing it, we were talking, so it's in the past tense. So it's almost like you've already had this conversation. You are already in the know. You already had the knowledge, the mantra inside you all along, which is the message of the song. And I don't know if it was constructed that way purposefully, but it's effing genius, to say the least.
And it was actually written that way, wasn't it? He was at Klaus Voormann's house, and Klaus had a harmonium, and he drifted towards the harmonium and started writing that song. And he said that it came out of that first line of what they'd just been discussing that evening. So you can definitely feel yourself part of that, can't you? That deep philosophical discussion.
What I also love about that opening line, though, is that it is also the same shtick that they've been doing since the Beatle days. Since the early Beatle days, you know, like, she loves you, from me to you, as Paul always uses as an example. The we were talking, it's just, bam, you're in the song. I mean, where are we going, George? And, you know, we're all like rabid Beatle fans. There's like no one resisting that notion that George is, you know, no one's refusing the invitation. He's what, 24 when he's writing this song?
Isn't that incredible? Yeah.
It's also a really brave song in its ideas and its instrumentation. It was a risk for George to kind of open himself up here and lay himself bare for all to see. And I'm definitely attracted to that. Also in terms of musicality, because he's not formally trained in all of this stuff. He's had probably 25 minutes with Ravi behind the bike sheds. Like, how do I sit? What? And it, maybe getting a few of the notes down, perhaps. You know, Ravi's always very kind and grandfatherly whenever he talks about George's sitar playing publicly, but I'm sure to other people behind closed doors, it's probably like, but yeah, it is brave for him to do all of this Indian music because he isn't formally trained in it, but he's trained just enough to be that conduit between East and West.
To be fair, so this is a year and a bit after he'd first recorded his sitar playing on Norwegian Wood, Rubber Soul. So he's been playing it for at least a year and a bit. And then we get some of it on Revolver, don't we?
Love You Too. Yeah. Love
which,
You Too and Tomorrow Never Knows. Yeah.
And then, and now probably his most indulgent Indian journey, isn't it, this one? This is not only, because arguably in those other songs, they're not Indian music. They are a sitar imposed on Western music, whereas this is the first time it's actually composed just like an Indian raga. And in fact, I was listening for preparation to this. I don't know if you know the album East Meets West by Yehudi Menuhin and Ravi Shankar, which had been released just before Sgt. Pepper, but there are stylistic connections. You can definitely hear how authentic Within You Without You is from that album.
No, my pre-album research was listening to Wonderwall Music.
All right.
I did not realise how much sitar was on that. Because the only clip that they use in the Living in the Material World documentary is that one song that's like... it's going to be George noodling for an hour, but there is so much excellent, like, cold cut, rarefied George Harrison sitar stuff on that album. So if you do like Within You Without You, if you are one of the four Beatle fans that actually likes The Inner Light, then definitely go and check out Wonderwall Music. On the Wonderwall album cover,
there actually is a wall of illusion. There's a guy standing there, there's a wall, and then there's like all this bright psychedelic stuff going on behind. And there's literally
behind a wall of illusion.
Like he literally sings about that. So it's all interconnected. George was very much in his Indian phase at this time. And I'm glad he went through with it and decided to carry on with it, because I mean, you've heard Only a Northern Song, his original Sergeant Pepper contribution. I think it's safe to say that episode on this show is not going to be out for a while, right?
I like that song, but you can see why it wasn't included on Sergeant Pepper's, can't you?
Yeah, it doesn't fit the material.
It doesn't. It's a, you know, it's obviously his disgruntlement with the royalty situation with Northern Songs and John and Paul. But one thing that's often, this leads me to an interesting point, because people talk about how positive the Sgt. Pepper album is. It's a very up, joyous album. And some people say that Within You, Without You is not that. Whereas I think quite the opposite. It's very positive. It has the line, "With your love, you can save the world," in it, which is probably one of the most positive things anyone could ever say.
With our love, with our love.
That line is up there with "The Word Is Love" and "All You Need Is Love" in terms of like great Beatles love statements. It's like they are. It's like their mission statement. Literally, you could see that on the Beatles bannerhead. I've never understood why people think this song's like ponderous or preachy or monotonous or. It just seems to me to be instantly rather joyous and instantly fun. Maybe there's pushback purely because it's the Indian music song. And I still feel like there is a sizable chunk of the Beatle fan base to this day who still feels that way. They just don't get it. I'm from Birmingham, which is like a very multicultural place. I've been around Indian people my whole life. I've heard the sounds, the sights, the smells. I've eaten the food. As you can see below camera, I definitely love the food. And so like, as someone who like, when I was growing up, that was just a very much ubiquitous part of my life. There was never a part of me that thought, oh no, it's like Bob Dylan going onto electric guitar. It's ruining the sound. Never thought that. It just felt like, oh, cool. And rather fittingly, this is the apotheosis of George's Indian music. There is no better example of him achieving to do what he's setting out to do with these Indian songs, which is to make them more palatable for a Western audience and introduce them and the ideas therein to this Western audience. And this does that like effortlessly. His other Indian compositions, like you said earlier, either tend to be like window dressing, or as we see with like The Inner Light, it's just too faithful. It's too faithful. It's borderline un-Beatle-esque, but because of George Martin, because of the iconic string orchestrations that he puts on this track, it is just the most serendipitously mellifluous piece of music ever put to tape. Neither side dominates each other. Nothing's out of balance. It is all perfect. And like originally, like my metaphor was going to be like dueling banjos, like. But they're not dueling, really. It's more like a dance. You know, they like one of them will lead for a bit, then the other one will lead, and it's always in support of each other.
Yeah, it's the East meets West, isn't it? It's the Indian musicians playing, is it tabla, sword mandal, or swa mandala, however you say it, and dil reba, and then the eight violins and three cellos from the Western world. You do get the feeling that George Martin enjoyed that, don't you? I mean, he's said various things about it in his career, but he seemed to have enjoyed the challenge of getting the Western string players to play those sort of microtones that the Indian musicians did by instinct.
There's definitely a lot of different things you can take from George Martin. I've always gotten the sense that his earlier statements were the truth, and then everything else has been marketing. George, can you soften your opinion on this for the anthology DVD, please? Oh, yes. Well, actually, I think it's actually quite a good song, actually, in a way. The one they included on the anthology was probably because George Martin had come around to his own orchestrations and decided to do an instrumental for Anthology 2. They don't do anything with George's vocal on that.
If you read the accounts that Jeff Emerick and others have of the session, and I don't know how undermined this is, but you get the feeling that there was a bit of eye rolling going on as people were like, how long is he going to be doing this? Because it was originally the tape was like 6 minutes or 6.5 minutes, wasn't it? And John and Paul were getting impatient. They left the studio after a bit of it, didn't they? I think they got a little bit involved, but then after that, they just left him to it. And I'm sure there's, you know, George Martin seemed to feel he had to bury the track a bit in Sgt. Pepper's, that it had to be sort of, and following it with When I'm 64 to kind of lift the mood. All these sorts of things feel like compromises, don't they?
The transition from this to When I'm 64 is one of my favourite contrasts in Beatledom ever. It is absolutely perfect. It's not quite as drastic as, say, Revolution 9 into Good Night, but, you know, it's definitely got... You feel the movement from one song to another. I like a good underdog story. I love it. And I like the fact that the rest of the Beatles didn't believe in George. I like the fact that Jeff Emerick and Neil Aspinall didn't, and George Martin didn't. But all of these little elements together all do come together to just create this perfect little microcosm of a narrative within the wider Beatles story.
In retrospect, at least, John Lennon was highly praising of it. And he said in 1980, just before he died, he said, this is one of George's best songs, one of my favourites of his too. He's clear on that song. His mind and music are clear. There is his innate talent. He brought that sound together. And if you think about George Harrison bringing a sound like that together alone, well, with help from George Martin, that is an amazing achievement, isn't it?
Because this ma is in the right into the beat if it goes.
He's always been an old soul, hasn't he? You know, he was a man preparing for death from the age of 22.
yeah.
And that even comes across in this song. He can't even go the first verse without mentioning the permanence of death and how that invalidates everything that you may or may not have learnt in life. I mean, lyrically, this is one of those songs that you can just break down every single individual line and you could get quite tedious.
Apparently, Stephen Stills had it carved into a stone monument in his yard, the whole lyrics of Within You, Without You. Stephen Stills of Crosby, Stills and Nash. So,
oh, man, I could imagine Neil Young kind of turning his nose up at that. But again, though, like going back to criticisms of the song, I've seen it be called indecipherable, and I've never thought that, you know, even in a song as supposedly philosophical and as head-trippy as this, George uses quite frank, clear and easy-to-understand language. Like, he doesn't want the message to be lost in overly verbose phrasing, such as myself. I mean, just try to realise it's all within yourself. No one else can make you change. And to see you're really only very small, and life flows on within you and without you. See, if you just say it as words and not singing it, it is just very good life advice.
Yeah, as John Lennon said, it's very clear, isn't it? Yeah.
Try to realize it's all within yourself. No one else can make you change. And to see you're really only very small. And life flows on within you and without you.
Yeah, and that is one of my favourite things about this song. But just the message of, like, we are all one, and you've got to sort yourself out spiritually before you die, and the power, Dorothy, was inside you all along. You could always go back to Kansas if you want to. That's all great stuff. That's all universal.
All that stuff you mentioned there about life flowing within you and without you is directly from Hindu teachings, but there's also a bit of Christian teaching in there, isn't there, where he says, the people who gain the world and lose their soul, which is a quote from the Bible. So there is, in many ways, a meeting of West and East here. It's not all pure Indian philosophy. He's thought about it, and he's thought about how it fits into his world too.
Yeah, he talks about how he loved the idea of you can't believe in something unless you've experienced it. And for me, that line just feels like he's talking about the Beatles, that they've gained the world and lost their souls. So that's something he's experienced. So that is something he believes. So that totally
right.
makes sense to me.
Yeah, interesting. That's a great way of seeing it, isn't it?
And the people who gain the world and lose their soul, they don't know, they can't see. Are you one of them?
Are you one of them? That line right. blows my mind regularly, because it's all like, even though it's conversational, it's been quite passive and almost like an observer quality, maybe. Like again, like it's a small gathering or something. But then, like when George directly confronts you, you're like, "Oh God, am I one of them? Have I sold my soul?" And obviously, the wall of illusion. I just love that. I love that imagery.
George Harrison has said that the lyrics were, or his least favourite part, and in fact the best part for him is the instrumental solo, and I have to agree, because I love the lyrics, but I love that instrumental solo, and it changes time signature into 5/4 time, for those who are fans of technical information. To me, I just wait for it every time I put it on, that when it goes into that rhythm and then comes out of it with a lovely little tabla lick, it's just a highlight of the performance.
For me, it's one of those bits that I can do in its entirety from start to finish. You know, bang, 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 you just have the whole thing mapped out.
Like air sitar.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, literally. I mean, Sitar Hero would be a very interesting product as well. There's over a billion people who might buy it, you know. But that whole section, you know, with those staccato plucking of the violins, that little bit of transitionary Swamandal, that like harp like thing where it goes that tabla, you are so right. It is so hypnotic. You are just like you are like the cobra. You're just there. You're transfixed. And that little, I mean, I love any little bits of dialogue or audio that slip under. And I'm not sure if it was always intended to be in there or whether the guy mixing it just kind of brought it up in the volume. But just that, one, two, that for me is probably the best bit of the whole song. I just love little moments like that. It just does it for me.
Jeff Emmerich says it's the first time anyone had ever recorded a tabla that closely. So those lovely resonances you get is down to the recording technique. And even Indian musicians hadn't heard that. So, yeah, it is unique, isn't it? It's so fresh and so intimate, like you said before.
Yeah, I mean, the message of the song is resonant, but it does feel like you are physically there vibrating in the room with these new and exciting instruments to people of the 1960s.
We must talk about the version that went on the Love CD, where they put the drum track of Tomorrow Never Knows. I always thought that was a stroke of genius, because it's two very similar songs, but they work, don't they?
I'd say it's probably the most iconic track from the Love soundtrack. It is the one that sells the concept in one single song perfectly. It's not too long, it's not too short, and it's just a simple edit. They don't try and do anything particularly complex. It's just we're going to do Within You, Without You with Ringo's drum track from Tomorrow Never Knows. And oh,
try to.
I think fundamentally, the most important thing we need to appreciate with this song is how bad it could have been. I mean, the idea that 1/4 very white men from Northern England, born during World War II, writing and conducting an Indian song, an Indian composition in 1967, with only one of the four members having actually gone to India at that time, should not have worked. It should have been a disaster. And yet, to say they stuck the landing is to undermine the song. This is a true classic. It is a mercurial blend of East and West that is, and never has been achieved again since, so far as I've heard, you know.
Absolutely. Ian McDonald, who has a great write-up of it in The Great Revolution in the Head book. He says it's the necessary sermon that comes with the community singing on Sgt. Pepper's. He calls it the conscience of the album. And he says, stylistically, it is the most distant departure from the staple Beatles sound in their entire discography. So that's an interesting point, isn't it? I mean, they never went further away from American R&B, which was their core, than this.
Mm-hmm. Considering the fact that this is Sgt. Pepper's, the album where they're not the Beatles, he's actually more in keeping with the theme of the album than the majority of the other material. But again, the reason it is Beatley is because George Martin could not leave well enough alone and had to stick his nose in. And thank God he did, because it is that confluence, it's those two together that make this song as precious as it is to me. It's definitely my second favourite Beatles song.
As you're in this mode of your second wave, any other mm-hmm. songs you were considering for this episode?
Don't Pass Me By. Yes, It Is. Sea of Holes. Christmas disc number 2.
You're definitely a deep level Beatles fan.
I just want to come on and do that bit where John says on that anthology, we were just a band that made it very big, that's all. Like, I'll just come and talk about that clip. How about that?
Okay, that'll be next. Yeah, when you've third appearance. Now, listen, I know the Paul or Nothing podcast, wonderful podcast, highly recommend it. I'm sure all our listeners know it, but how can they find out more about you and where can they find you?
Yeah, you can check out Paul or Nothing anywhere where you find podcasts. That's like Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, that kind of thing. You can always drop us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at McCartneyPod. Got new episodes coming out soon. We've just done a 4-part series on Run, Devil, Run. I'm just going to drop a quick one on the McCartney underdubs, and then we're going to be doing some more McCartney covers. We're going to do some hot hits and cold cuts. We're going to tackle Wingspan soon. Very excited about that. And I'm going to be interviewing Steve Mateo as well soon to talk about At Naturally as well.
His fantastic previous guest on this show. Film. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I noticed your quality of guest suddenly skyrocketed after I was on. So I'm guessing after this, it's going to be Dave Grohl.
I think Ringo's on next. Yeah.
I never liked that, Sam. He always takes the piss out of me on Ball or Nothing.
You definitely helped put us on the map. Thank you, Sam, for that. Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you guesting not once, but now twice. And it's been really great talking to you about the Beatles and specifically about Within You, Without You. Thanks. It was great.
Life goes on, as George said in this song. So, thank you for having me on, man. It's been really fun. I'm looking forward to talking about that John Lennon clip with you in the future. It's going to be great.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Thanks for listening to My Favourite Beatles Song. If you like the podcast, please consider giving it a rating or review on your favourite podcast platform. This helps me to reach new listeners. You can follow the podcast on X.com, Instagram, and Facebook. look for the links in the show notes. Thanks to Joe Kane for the fantastic music and Mark Cunningham for the logo design. I'll see you next time.